when he fell in the middle and caught the line without a harness was definitely nerve-wracking.
How would you describe Spencer?
Oh, shit. Spencer's crazy. Spencer's not crazy. I need to think about this for a second.
I knew that Andy had the world record longest free solo. I had been free soloing, and this was, I looked at it and I said, this is the world record line. Every single step I took, I let out a grunt. It was like, ah! Yeah, it wasn't just this like peaceful walk across. It was like me and the line bucking it out, you know? Okay, rigging is correct. Yes. I've walked it. I know that I'm capable. Yes. I can catch the line. Yes. Okay, if I fall off, I'm gonna die. Yes. Okay, let's go.
The rope is free!
What?
The rope is free!
Ah, shit!
Liam's fallen into a crevasse, and I immediately thought he's dead or at least seriously hurt.
And my guts had been ripped out of my body and were being contained by my flight suit.
I know a mountain lion is on top of me.
Welcome to another Wildertainment Wednesday. I'm your host, Vinny Two Crocs. Welcome to the show where we tell entertaining wilderness adventure stories. And boy, do we got an entertaining one today. Special thanks to Levi Allen, who produced the phenomenal film Untethered. I use a lot of his footage in this YouTube video. Well worth the watch. If you want to help support my guest, Spencer, then you go to Slack Life BC. That is Slack Life BC. Check out his awesome company. And if you want to help support the show, you know what to do. You go to the Apple Podcast, you leave a rating, and you leave a review. And if you don't want to, then you can go fuck yourself. And you can subscribe on YouTube. And if you don't want to, fuck yourself. Doesn't matter, because this is a great episode. Thanks for watching. Spencer Seabrook. Fucking sick to have somebody in the studio in my basement here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
What I'm psyched about is, well, A, you're the first like live person that we're having on. B, second time drinking on the podcast. It's going to be good. And thirdly, I think this is like the probably the gnarliest, if not the second gnarliest story. We had a girl with like her guts ripped out off of a helicopter.
She wins.
Yeah. She was
yeah. She gets
like,
it.
Yeah. She had like what your body could have looked like if you didn't succeed at your endeavors. But what's going to be cool about this is we're going to break down this event that you did, and I think you're gonna do a good job at dissecting why it's rational.
Yeah,
but I think it's important for the viewers to remember that what you did is fucking bananas, okay? I think like we can't forget that. We're gonna try to objectify and make sense of it all, but in the end of the day, what you did is you walked a slack line, and I have the stats here, correct me if I'm wrong, 64 meters, 210 feet in length, so yeah. That's what you crossed, and that is while hovering 951 feet. That's 290 meters off the deck.
That's correct.
And that's right in town here in Squamish.
Yeah. Yeah. Up on the Chief. Yeah. Those numbers are correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how do you pick that mission as that's what I want to do?
I mean, really, it all started with just slacklining itself, you know, and when I started doing it, I was inspired by Andy Lewis. I had seen The Real Rock where he was on it. And it's like I had been climbing for a couple of years, and I always found that when I got to the top, I was lacking like this feeling that I should have, like, great, I'm up here, but like what, you know, I wish I had something else to do when I got there. And when I saw Andy and...
Sorry, is that Sketchy Andy?
Yeah, Sketchy Andy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I saw the like what he was doing and it just appealed to me, you know, and I walked out of there with this like spark inside of me and yeah, immediately started slacklining. And as soon as I started slacklining, I started highlining first just in the trees. And then my first mission was like up on the Camel and like on the North Shore Range next to Crown Mountain. So it was like the real deal. I didn't just like, you know, pussyfoot my way into it. I like did it in the trees, took a whipper and I'm like, okay, I trust it. Let's take it up high. And as soon as I got comfortable, I started free soloing because I felt like that was just the natural progression of what we were doing. Like you'd walk a line until you were comfortable. And then the ultimate was to free solo.
Wait, right off the bat, you're like,
oh yeah, that was the goal, right? That's like what you do. That I just assumed. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, what else do you do? How do you make it harder? How do you make it more challenging? But after sharing a few free soloing videos online and having like the backlash, I realized that, oh, okay, this isn't just like a normal thing that everybody does.
Wait, so how many slack lines did it take before you were already hopping on without
someone like my first high lines. Once I was walking like 20 or 30 meters on a high line, I figured, okay, I could walk half of that free solo. So I'd walk like a 15 meter line free solo. Cause I'm like, well, fuck, if I can walk this 30 meter back and forth, then of course I could walk this one without falling.
So how many slack lines per se would you say before you unclipped, you detached yourself?
I mean, high lines probably like five or something. But yeah, but you know, once you're on it, you just, I don't know. Yeah, you feel it, or you're, I don't know, feeling it.
Jesus. All right. Yeah. So did you practice quite a bit, at least in training on lower, you know, just the regular slack line?
Yeah, for sure. Like I was at it hard when I first started. That's all I did. That's all I did. I'd get off work and just slackline every weekend. It was just, you know, dreaming up the next mission. We went to Cypress Falls Park in West Vancouver, and there's a canyon and some waterfalls, and it's like, it's just perfect. You know, there's all sorts of lengths, and you could rig everything naturally just from tree to tree. And we started going there a lot, and you just had a range of different sizes. And like, you know, in my brain, I'd look and be like, okay, it's water. So like, yes, it's like, you know, 20 meters high, but like if I fell, it's water.
It's still 20.
Yeah, I know, of course. Yeah. High. But I mean, there's certain ways I would like justify in my head that it would be okay, even if I fell. And that's how I kind of got the feel for it. And then from there, you just take it higher. Then it's more about trusting catching the line if you are to fall.
So wait, the opportunity I had to get in touch with you was through your now ex, unfortunately.
Yeah.
At her slackline, well, it's not hers, but she was slacklining at the falls, the Mamquin Falls.
Oh yeah, yeah. At
Powerhouse. Have you done that one?
Yeah, I've walked that line. Yeah, okay. I haven't free soloed it.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
How high would you say that is?
That's probably like 10, 15 meters high. That's so not super 20. High. Well, yeah, I mean, but it's, yeah, it was probably similar to that or around, you know, they would range in different heights for sure.
I'm going to throw it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, it's not, but it's like, I don't know. It's the line that you're on. You're not focusing on what's below you. It's like you look ahead and it's like, man, if you can walk it, you can walk it. It's like you could walk down a curb every day of your life and then all of a sudden you take everything away from either side of the curb and it's like, yes, is it scary? But you also know that you can do it. So just do it.
So how many hours would you say you've put in slacklining or just being on a line in general before you do your first high line where you could die untethered?
It's going to range for every person as they get into it. But for me, it was probably like, I mean, combined in hours, it was probably only like a day of slacklining, really, of like probably 24 hours.
Oh my God. Before you hop on a highline?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's more, it's like when you're feeling it, you feel it, you know? And think about 24 hours of slacklining combined is probably over like a month or 2 months, right? It's like when you think about putting in a couple hours, it's like an hour here, an hour there. It takes a little while before you get to 24. And, you
know. We're talking 24 hours, like feet on a line?
I'm saying, yeah, exactly. Okay. Not like the first day, yeah, just okay, all
okay.
of a sudden.
Okay.
But I mean, nowadays, like that was me starting then. That was like 8 years ago when I started. And there was nobody around doing it. Like some of my oldest friends that I have from around here, I met through slacklining. There's some like the OGs that like were the only slackliners in town. And I learned a bunch from them. And then I got limited to where I could learn anything else. And I had to start figuring things out for myself. So like when I rigged my first high line, it was like, you know, what I could Google / actually understand. You know, I had friends that are very smart, and I'm not saying that I'm not smart, but you know, friends with, you know, a degree in math physics can explain how this anchor works and how you could do it in a different way and it could be really bad, you know. Mm. Yeah, like learning to do a sliding X is like that's all you really need to know, you know.
Was there some sketchy shit going on back then?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've done a lot of sketchy shit. To be honest, even now, I feel like I the way I rig things, it's like, I know that it's good enough, but some people's ideals have changed and they want, you know, a certain safety factor. And they've like, there's been enough testing that they're like, okay, this is what we should all do. And it's like, you know, so some people actually feel sketchy using my rigging, but everyone also knows that it's totally fine.
Yeah.
It's this weird thing, you know, but it's funny. It's almost like a bit of a joke in a way, because I'm just like, I'm a bit older now in the community. I have like, you know, a lot of experience, but I'm also known for like, I don't know. Yeah. Making it work.
like they're sketchy Andy, you're like spicy Spence.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's not unsafe, it's just a little spicy.
But it's about understanding what you're doing, you know? The first bit of highlining is the most scary because all you're thinking about is the gear and like, is it gonna blow out? And it's like, after you go out on a highline, you take a couple whippers, you bounce around, you're like, it's fine. I can actually like let go, and then you're not thinking about it, right? And that's just the key of any sport that's like dangerous, that you're relying on some sort of safety to back you up, right? But then, yeah, once you get used to it, it's just, fuck, it's a highway, you know, like, you know that it's good and it's fine. Just trust it.
So what we're here to really talk about is what was depicted in that movie, Untethered.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm French Canadian. I'm struggling so much to pronounce Untethered.
You should have mentioned that. I wouldn't have come.
I'm kidding. Dude, the cheese is just overflowing.
I live with a couple of French Canadians as well.
They're the worst. So... how long had you been slacklining before you saw this mission, the Untethered mission, as like, when did it start flirting with your mind? Like, oh, you know what? Peak two to peak three.
Yeah. When I first started, we going up the Chief, we go to the North Gully. That's like where people, you know, like long before I was there, had established the line, as well as like Dean Potter had established a line there. He's, you know, he's world renowned. He's gone now.
Dean Potter, for all those that don't know, is a famous rock climber.
Base jumper, slackliner. Yeah, extraordinaire. Yeah.
He's kind of like the Alex Honnold before Alex Honnold was.
Yeah, for sure.
But more diversified.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, we used to, you know, before I got told not to, we used to camp up at the North Gully all the time. We would just go up there and rig a line and we'd stay there for the weekend. And one time I was up there with a friend, Adam Mertens, and I had never been over to the North Gully. I had always just gone up to the North Gully, rigged a line, and stayed there. And one day I walked over to the North and like, oh my God, man, it was like a whole new world. And it compared to what the North Gully was, North Gully is about, you know, 30 meters across at the small part. And if you want to go beyond that, it's like 100 meters kind of in any other direction. So we weren't even looking, we weren't even thinking that, but we went over to the North and it's like these, you know, 50, 60, 70 meter range. And this is like the perfect stepping stone.
I'm going to throw up.
I remember looking at, it's called the Itis, is the line that I had walked. We'll get to that, the name.
Yeah, okay.
But I remember sitting there with Adam and looking at it and going, I knew that Andy had the world record longest free solo. I had been free soloing, and this was, I looked at it and I said, this is the world record line. The first time I ever like looked across the gap. And it took a long time after that for it actually happened. But
what was sketchy Andy's?
It was 55 meters.
And you knew, and it just was, by eyeing it, that was longer.
Yeah. Well, we had a range finder. So by putting my eye to the range finder, I would see the length. And
okay.
So I kind of knew it. I had planted that seed, and I have this thing about me where when I say that I'm going to do something out loud, it's like I get anxiety about it. Like I have to do it. You know, that is, so before I actually say it out loud, I definitely think about a lot of things, and I think about whether or not I'm serious and whether or not I want to plant this seed into the world. And once I do, it becomes very serious and I take it seriously. And, there's very few things that I've said out loud that, I haven't done yet.
Yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you going to say on the podcast? All right. So when did you decide to verbalize it and make it a reality? And what got you there?
At that moment.
That moment.
That moment when I saw
the gap. On, you're like,
yeah,
that's the
this
record.
Is it. This is it. So in Untethered, you see Adam Mertens is being interviewed. He's the curly haired hippie talking. And he said that line like after I had said that. You know, he knew that I was on that train. And he says, they're like, what's Spencer going to next? And he's like, world record free solo. That's what he's doing. But he said that like, you know, before the solo happened. So it's like super cool. The timeline of like me being up there with him, me saying that to him, him calling it out on, you know, recorded, you know, on video, and then it actually happening. It's like really cool to have that impression.
So, okay. Now you've decided you're going to do this. Mm-hmm. Or you've verbalized it.
Yeah.
What comes next? Well, is it training?
Training, visualizing. You know, once I was soloing like the lines in the North Gully that are like equally as high, but not nearly as long. When I first started soloing, I would go one way and I'd step off the other end and it'd be this release, you know, because the whole time you're fighting your adrenaline and everything is peaking inside of you, but you're like, you know, just staying calm, dial, your life depends on it. And you step off the other side and it's just this like fucking explosion, you know, you feel all of that adrenaline, you feel just so jacked. So I had to learn to maintain that mind state for a little bit longer. So rather than stepping off and getting jacked up, I would step off, breathe, relax, get back on the line and go back. And then I would do it again, you know? And so just spending more time in that headspace was the hardest thing.
And what is your technique to basically cool down your adrenaline? Is that what you're doing? You're managing
it. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. I can't really explain how it is. You just try. I don't know. Like most people get excited, but you need to just, adrenaline is actually like what turns you into superhuman. Your reaction time's better. You know, you're just way more aware. Like you're dialed in this moment, but only if you know how to harness it. Otherwise it becomes anxiety, right? And that's fear. Fear is adrenaline. That's like what your heart rate goes up, you feel uneasy, you're not really sure, and you're like, fuck me, you're dialed is what it is. And as long as you're not actually afraid, you could justify yourself being in that position, you learn to use it as this super drug, you know, you just become dialed.
Could it be a negative impact though in the slackline situation?
Yeah, of course. If you're not in control of your own situation, then the adrenaline will get the best of you. And like I have when early on in my soloing days, when I soloed Dean's line for the first time.
What's Dean's line?
Dean's line is next to the original. That's in the North Gully, and it's the line that Dean Potter established. And it was really important for me to free solo it because Dean Potter free soloed it. And I the video of him doing it just like inspired me. And there's a video on the Slack Life BC YouTube channel.
Yeah, I'll put it up for the YouTuber.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah. That of me walking it, and it's all one clip unedited, and it's me getting onto it, taking a couple steps, and then actually jumping back to like the cliff. It's deceiving in the video. I was more okay than it looks. And then I get back.
What do you mean? What happens in the video?
Well, I like take a couple of steps and then I like just kind of step off the line back towards, and it looks like I'm on the edge of the cliff, but really there's a few more feet of rock that are just kind of out of that you can't see. So it looks really fucked when I jump back onto the rock, but it's not that bad. But then I walk out
into the line.
No, this is at the very beginning, the very beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is my first attempt at soloing it. And so, I then, you know, kind of grunt, get stoked. All right, I'm doing it. I step back on the line. I start walking. I'm out over the edge. I'm in the middle, and all of a sudden, my adrenaline got the better of me, and my legs started shaking. And I took one step that I shouldn't have taken. Like I was shaking, and when I should have just caught the line, sat down and caught the line, instead I'm like, no, and I like forced myself to take a step, and then all of a sudden I look forward, and the line is just going whoop, 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 back and forth, and that's just my nerves. And so I just drop, catch the line, I swing underneath the whole thing, and then come back up, and then just shimmy back to the beginning, and step off. Laugh, grunt, high five my buddy, and then get back on it and walk all the way across.
All right. So I think it's important for us to break down these catches, because I'll put the video up of you on Untethered.
Yeah.
But basically, for anybody that wouldn't watch, I would assume it's holy shit, this all went to crap, he's gonna die now. But basically you guys learn to catch the line, and I interviewed your friend, so we'll play a little clip here. And she kind of explains a little bit about catching.
There's probably plenty of slackliners out there that they go on lines and they don't catch, and they're really very slow, very focused, and not want to catch. It's just you stand up, you walk, you get off. And I think Spencer was never afraid of catching, kind of a reset. You know, you sit down, you didn't feel at that time, you didn't feel comfortable to take that step, catch the line, you reset, and then okay, I'm ready to go now. And I think that kind of shows how strong mentally Spencer is to free solo, is that he's able to kind of refocus and like, no, this didn't feel right, I want to sit down, take a breath, stand up again and try it again. People love to say that he almost died and he fell and he caught the line and make it sound all crazy, but it was all very controlled.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's break it down, because like in this solo attempt, like, or not attempt, but at the start, yeah, you fall.
In my first attempts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You fall. Is it a couple times?
Yeah, twice. Yeah. Yeah, basically I stood up and fuck, man, 64 meters across and 300 meters high. I was like, I was feeling it, you know, it hit me hard. So I just, yeah, I got nervous and I sat down, wasn't feeling it. And then I fucking screamed. I let out this like, rah! You know, like from like deep. And I stood up again and I took one more step, one step, and then another step, and I just and I fell down again, and then well, I didn't fall. I looked down at the line, put my hands on it before my feet are off of it, and then split my legs and then wrap my legs around it. You know, it's very controlled. And at that point I had taken two steps forward, so before I started, I shimmied back those two steps, and yeah, and then stood up, and it was just fucking, it was dial at that point. But it's just shaking it. It's trusting your gear, learning to trust your gear. At that point, the gear was my hands. You know, when you take a whipper on your rope, when you're climbing, you're like a little looser. You know, you're like, yeah, all right, now I'm ready. You know, and it's the same thing. It's like, fuck, man, what if I get out there and I get scared? You know, like, oh my God. And it's like, you just have to go out there and check your gear a couple of times. And then after that, you're going to be a little bit more reassured.
So you almost think it was necessary as like a warm up?
Maybe I wasn't like intentionally doing it. I would have much rather just stood up and gone. But let's be real, man. It wouldn't have nearly as many views on YouTube if I hadn't have done that.
It's true. Yeah. And that picture's famous of you like legs sprawled out, like grabbing the line.
Oh, dude, the headlines are hilarious. You know, almost dies when he slips. It's like, at what point did I slip? You know, I don't know. I never saw myself slip. Never slipped.
The other thing that Maya here breaks down is, you guys, and I'm not a slackliner, but you guys know the point where you can catch and where you're pushing it too far and you're just going to get fucking catapulted off the thing.
Yeah.
So how do you know? What's the feeling?
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, when you're walking with a leash on, you can fight it until you fall off, you know? And then, so to progress to soloing, I'm just going to need to inject this. Yeah. Sometimes you tie into things that would still save your life, but you definitely don't want to fall onto. So you like tie the rope around your ankle,
right,
instead of to a harness, or like just around, like this belt I have tied the rope around.
That specific belt?
This specific belt.
That,
yeah,
specific belt.
I'm wearing it
life.
Untethered as well. I walk.
It's
with
that
this.
Belt and untethered?
Yeah, for sure it is. Yeah. It's worked. It's held enough times. You know, I double it back and then you tie into that, and it's like, yes, you do not want to fall, but if you do, that's okay. So basically, when you're walking,
dude, that belt is fucking thin, man.
Yeah, it's the same, dude. It's the same as what your harness is made of,
I guess.
Yeah.
That
when
fucking
you
buckle better be metal.
Yeah, it is for sure. Okay. It's made for it. It's called the danger belt.
I got a Walmart. I don't know. It's
no, it was bought at the climbing store. It's Metolius. You know, it's like
okay.
A couple bar tacks in it.
Okay.
They'd probably hold. But I'd never want to see if it...
Oh, you never have
I've never fallen on it. Okay. Fuck no. No, it's the whole idea, right? It's like training your brain to walk without a leash. So you walk with something that's like less than ideal to fall on. And that's going to kick your ass into doing it. But if you do actually fall... So it's like this kind of this backup, you know? It's like or you tie it around one ankle, loop it underneath the line and tie it to your other ankle. That's called shackles.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So anyway,
wait, doesn't that
back to where we were...
Yeah, that didn't crisscross though, the shackles thing?
Like not until you turn around and you come back.
True,
but if you
true.
Leave enough slack, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So anyway, when you're walking with a leash on, you'll just fight until you fall. If you have a Swami belt on, you're walking like you're soloing, but you also have that extra little bit. You're like, I'm kind of still tied in. All of a sudden, you're free soloing, and man, it's like if you go anywhere outside of perfect, you're catching. You're not fighting to try to stay on it. You know, it's like you're fucking dialed. That's it. So there's this like, you know, I'd say that you, I just picture it in the lines, you know, and the person staying there, it's like, you could stay within this gap and pre-solo and you're fine. You get out to there and it's like, maybe with a Swami belt, you'd fight that far. And then without a leash on, you just like, it's infinite, you know, like you could just.
You mean with a leash on?
With a leash on. Yeah. You'll surprise yourself how easy it is to actually stay on when you're like, oh my God, I'm going to fall. And then you just be patient. You're like, oh, all right. You know, I guess I'll keep walking. But I would never do that free soloing.
So it's parallel lines, basically.
Yeah,
that's staying
what I'm
within your box.
At. Yeah, exactly.
And the box just gets wider as
the safety
increases.
Yeah,
Yeah, that makes sense. It's pretty rational.
Yeah.
But it's still bananas. We're going to remember that this is fucking bananas. So how do you pick the day? Like, is it weather? Is it seasonal as well?
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of, you know, the times would come. I always have these ideas in my head, and you're kind of slowly working towards them, planning, visualizing, and then the time comes, and, you know, you go for it. At the time, we had a 100-meter line rigged kind of right next to it that I had never walked, and we also had that line rigged, and I stepped on the 100-meter, and I was kind of, and then I struggled in the first, like, I don't know, just a few times trying to stand up, and then I thought to myself, okay, like, it's either I put all my energy into doing this or I do what I like really came here to do. So I went back, I untied. And at the time, the drone operator guy literally had like just arrived. That just like this perfect timing. And I was like, okay, dude, I'm like, I'm going to do a walk on the line and then I'm going to take my harness off and I'm going to free solo it. And then that's what I did.
I want to talk about breaking down the actual walk and the drone will come up because I think that could throw some stuff off. But I do want to talk about just the technique of slacklining. At this point, like, what have you developed as far as real pro techniques of slacklining? Because, you know, you're always learning, right? Like, rock climbing, I've been doing it for maybe 4 or 5 years. And just now, am I really comprehending how much, like, you can utilize your core in different aspects? Like, even walking a slab, just keeping it tight on a shitty foot, it just keeping that core tight sucks you onto the rock, right?
Yeah.
What are some of those, like, micro techniques that you have developed as an experienced slackliner that most, you know, potential beginners haven't really unraveled yet?
Yeah. Well, I find that looking forward and where you're looking has always been like a very important thing in learning slacklining. But it wasn't until I did it blindfolded that I realized how much the visualization actually throws you off in a longer line sense or in highlining, because it's so crazy. And so, well, I've learned to focus on where my head is, you know, and that's it. It's like literally keeping your whole body stacked. And there's times to break down and be loose and move dramatically. And there's times to just be locked and dialed. And it's literally just like, where is your head? Because when you're blindfolded and walking a line, you have nothing to look at. And all you can do is like, just think about where your head is, you know, and that literally that's all it is. Keeping your head above your feet, right? That's it. It's like, and it's just so simple. You'll be doing you'll be fighting, you'll be over to the side and you're like, oh my God. It's like, wait. Oh yeah. Okay. You know, I'm back. It's like literally that easy.
It's really a lot of in the neck, the head, like the micro adjustment of the head,
like,
position.
You know, like your shoulders and head. It's like, where are you, like, yeah, yeah. Look where you want to go.
I thought it was all about monkey arms.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, if you're swinging your arms around, then you're like fighting the balance. Really, like your arms can be like down and relaxed. I always found if I opened my palms up, it brought my elbows in and dropped my arms. So whenever the first thing that gets tired for me when I'm walking a really long high line is my shoulders, because it's this constant, like just small little tweaking, you know? And yeah, and the best thing you can do to relax, I always find, is put my palms up, and it just like brings my elbows down and in, and then you're just like calm. You know, subtle. You should be able to walk without moving your arms. Just stay locked. You know, when you get dialed, you can just run across it.
One thing Maya mentioned is she timed you, and it was approximately, is it 4 minutes? Do you know the exact time?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't remember the exact time, but it was actually faster than when I had a harness
on.
That's
what she said.
Yeah.
But yeah. Dude, I remember her saying that, because I thought, you know, in the video, I don't know if they actually played the whole 4 minutes in the video, but I remember... I never thought it was that long. Like, for me, that sounds like decades. It's because it's so intense. Like, your life is literally on the line for 4 fucking minutes of concentration. Yeah. 4 minutes. Does that, how much would you say that feels like to you? Does it feel like 4 or does it feel like 30?
No, it felt like a minute, you know, it felt like pretty quick. Like, it's just in sections, stand up, okay, I'm standing, I'm walking, oh my God, I'm in the fucking middle, whatever, stay focused. It's like, oh, almost there, just keep going, you know, and you're like, holy fuck, I'm at the end, but stay focused, okay, yeah, you know, it's just in these, like, increments. And I also, like, you don't hear it in the video because of, there's a drone playing, so they've cut audio of me from another walk into it. That's to make it more dramatic, yeah, of course, yeah. But every single step I took, I let out a grunt. It's like it was probably the loud, you wouldn't even hear the drone over the audio probably. Every step it was like, ah! You know, it was like, it wasn't just this like peaceful, walk across. It was like me and the lion bucking it out, you know?
Now, why is that? Why?
Because I was fucking scared, you know? It was like I knew I was capable. I was solid. I wasn't going to let my adrenaline get the better of me, you know? I was fucking doing it. I'd come this far, and it's just like, for me, that's what I do, you know? Like, other people are different, and for me, it's like I'll let out a grunt. I hate that anxiety, that built-up tension you get when you're nervous or when you're scared, and I believe, like, fucking letting it out is so important. So important, you know?
But you wouldn't necessarily do that normal highlining.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm fighting, if you're, like, at that moment when you're about to fall, like I was talking about, and you're, like, fighting to bring it back, then you're sometimes you let out a grunt. It's when you're like, you have that built up tension, that anxiety, you know, like they do it in karate. They teach you to like let it out. And it's like, there's a reason for that, you know?
I do it too. Sometimes I do it when I'm really pushing it and I'm on the verge of it. Usually, honestly, when I climb my hardest climbs, I don't power scream. It's odd.
Yeah.
But when I'm really trying super hard and I'm a little, honestly, it's when I'm a little scared too.
Yeah.
It's to psych myself out. Do you think there is like, was there fear doing this?
100%. Yeah. That's why, I mean, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It definitely, there was fear, 100%. But there was also enough confidence to push forward.
Because, like, if we break down Alex Honnold, right? He's like the whole solo climber.
Yeah.
He always says, like, if you get to the point of being scared, while, like, he's scared before, but when you're on it and doing it, there shouldn't be fear. But I don't see how that is necessarily translatable to slacklining.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what he's saying, but there is a level of fear. Like, fucking fuck off, Alec. Like, I don't care what you say, dude. Like, yes, of course. Yeah, I would. It's that, yes, fear, but confidence. It's like, so you're saying you're just completely calm and like just cruising. It's like, yeah, in a sense, just like I was also completely calm and cruising, but I was also like fighting the fact of, you know, human evolution has brought us to a point to know that I shouldn't be here doing this. And no matter how many times I've done it or built up to this, it's just simply not going to just be a fucking walk in the park.
So glad you said that, because if you said you weren't, I was going to be like, you're a fucking liar.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I'm calling him out, all right? I'm calling Arnold out. Yeah. So when you get him on the podcast, you can bring that up.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Yo, a slackliner says you're full of shit. But one of the classic things that soloists try to say is, and Maya said it actually when I talked to her briefly, she was like, you know, the risk of slacklining, you know, you can compare it to, and they always say this, it's like the motto of soloing in any sport. It's just like driving down the highway. Driving down the highway is sketchier. There's more factors that you can't control. But when you're slacklining, most factors, unless even if a bird flies by, most factors you're kind of controlling. Mm-hmm. Would you kind of agree with that too?
Yeah, the way I always put it is, me free soloing is like me driving down a highway without a seatbelt on, but nobody else is on it and I paved it myself. You know? And it's like, yeah, I mean, you know that you're in control, but what are like the real risks? Most people would do that. If they had an open highway, they'd go, fuck yeah, I'll take my seatbelt off and drive as fast as I can. It'd be scary, but they also know that they're in control because they've done it so many times, you know? But then you add other things and, you know, things that could happen. And that's where people are ignorant in life. You know, how many people die in the Sea to Sky Highway or snowboarding or, you know, snowboarding at Whistler? You know, it's like literally. And then mountain biking, you know, it's like there's so many. And I mean, climbing, you know, people, these are all regular day things now. They're all like normal. It's normal for you and your friends to go to the climbing gym and then progress a little bit. Now we're climbing outside. It's like, are you actually aware of the risks that you're taking? You know, because it's so normal. But, you know, I feel like whenever we're doing these like elevatedly dangerous things, we're so aware of all of the things that are actually dangerous to us. And we mitigate all of these risks through training and practice and proper rigging and experience, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is crazy though. Like even now, I think just the other day, I was lowering a climber and it was like a 35 meter route and the rope was 70. So she was going to make it back down, but neither of us, mostly me as a belayer, didn't tie a knot. Right. I wasn't looking. I just like felt it in my hand. I was like, whoa, and I like pinched it, the tip of it with my hand. I was like, but she was pretty much on the ground. She was on the ground, to be honest, but on kind of a ledge. And I was like, oh, like, these are the things. These are the fucking things. You forget to check your oil on your car, and then you explode on your man-made highway, you know? I do want to break down, though, the day. So how do you pick a day? Like, does the tension matter? Because does that have to be super specific that you've trained on it? Tension on the line?
Yeah, you want it to be relative. You know, you're not going to get onto it and just on-site solo it when you haven't felt the line before. So like on that day, I had walked it a few times. I felt like it might need a little bit more tension. I tensioned it, I walked it with a leash, and then I free soloed it. That was, so it's like, you know, it needs to be relative. And the tension does change as you walk it in different temperatures and humidity, and this, you know, it all changes in the slightest ways, you know, not super crazy, but I felt like it was important to just be current with it. You know, I wasn't going to walk it a bunch, kind of fuck off and do whatever and then just come back. I was going to be like walking with a leash, picture visualizing being solo, and then just take it off and then solo it.
What about winds?
The winds were low. Typically in Squamish, it's either north or south, going through the valley, and the north gully, or the north is like well protected. So you might get a little, you know, swirling a little rotor wash, but it wasn't super windy on that day. And it, on a line that length, it wouldn't make a huge deal as long as it wasn't like ripping, you know?
But still, you were going for the world record free solo. I feel like everything's got to be kind of perfect. Are you wearing like the same clothes?
I had shoes. I listened to music. I had, you know, my hat. There's like certain things. Yeah, I'd feel like, you know, we're like, at the time I had these fucking ripped up climbing pants and these old Lakai skate shoes. And in a way of like, you know, a lot of sports people, they'll have like their favorite socks or their underwear, right? That's like a little bit superstitious. And it's like, yeah, everything had to be kind of right, you know, but it's not, you know, at that time, it's not like I was picking through some wardrobe and that's what it was. That's pretty much all I wore every day. So
what was the song you're listening to?
I honestly don't even remember.
You don't remember the song?
No, it was some mix. It was like some mix that was just some like mellow, like house, just like, I don't know. It was mellow.
Yeah, like, yeah, I would think it's spiritual music. That's what I would go with.
Yeah, like, I'm not like the most spiritual person, or I wouldn't call myself spiritual. I'm sure I am in my ways, but
I'm just saying the vibe.
No, of course. Yeah. I don't know. I like to just like, I like the happy, just kind of like bouncy, whatever.
Well, Honnold apparently does it to like metal. I don't say how you do that.
Yeah. I like listening to dubstep when I'm walking with a leash on, or like whatever. I love that. It's just like, I don't know. It's like powerful.
But you don't remember the song once you actually traversed it?
No, I mean like it was on something on my little shitty MP3 player at the time that a friend had put on there. I don't.
Interesting.
It wasn't significant. I was thinking it was more distraction. I smoke weed, and I definitely was good and medicated at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, but I also find that just kind of helps. I mean, like, I'm a bit ADHD, so when it comes to like distractions and things like that, it helps focus, you know. And I always find like the flow state being a little bit easier to find when you're a little chonged up, you know.
Yeah. Now, how much weed, Spencer? How much is the right amount of weed before you do the world record like traverse?
Man, I don't think I've ever actually talked about this like in a public way, because, you know, I don't know.
Well, I think it's
young kids as well. I'm not trying to encourage everyone to smoke weed. I'm saying for me it works.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this, like me, like some of my best on-siting rock climbing is on weed.
Yeah.
I become super present. I see the beauty in the movement and the rock. I'll be like in love with the crystal. I'm like, this is the prettiest crystal wall of crystals. Me and this crystal are one.
Yeah.
Goodbye, crystal. Next crystal.
So yeah, I'm not saying that like weed will make you a better slackliner in any way, but if it works for you, then it probably works well. But at the time I actually had this like shatter pen, and I had this big haul of it. And then that's when I like tensioned the line, did it, and I just kind of fell into this flow. And
what's a shatter band?
A shatter pen. So like shatter, it's like super concentrated.
Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah. It gets you super duper baked, but in the pen, it's only like, it's not like taking a big dab of it through a bong. It's like just a, you know, just a subtle lungful, but of like some super concentrated stuff.
Was it like
sativa?
Does it kick you in the dick though? Like,
oh, stone. Yeah. But it's like the same thing. Like, you don't get stoned if you're busy. You know, if you want to be, if you like smoke weed and sit on the couch and watch the TV, you get stoned, you know. But when you have a little puff and you start doing stuff, you're not stoned. You know, you're like, you're just in it. Like you said, you're present. You're focused. You're like doing your thing, you know? So
But I've also had weed in a sense where it makes you super anxious. It's never happened to me rock climbing, oddly. Yeah. Like, if the few times I have done that rock climbing, it's been good. And I don't know. Honestly, it's usually when I'm indoors that, like, it's a bad experience. Like, it's like you get that anxiety.
But again, that's, you know, that's the person on the day, the strain, the whatever. You know, you might have already had some other things going on and whatever. You know, like, who knows? It, your body will speak to you. And if it's not feeling it, then you're not feeling it.
Oh, all right. So you smoke a little weed. You have your music playing.
Yeah.
And I had to ask Maya, like, what was the entourage like? And it was kind of interesting because you didn't know Maya that well at the time.
No.
Right? She was a brand new slackliner.
Yeah, she was
so
fresh.
So she broke down the situation a little bit. Because I needed to know from a third eye's perspective. So.
I remember Michael maybe saying a couple of words of like, just breathe, relax, this is beautiful type of thing. I remember him saying a couple of words and it was just silent. We were all just there watching. And I think I was not really thinking of anything. I remember, I think Michael was actually sitting on this air mattress, like camping air mattress that folded into a chair naked, just sitting there. Yeah. And I remember looking back and kind of finding it was just a funny place, funny situation to be in. You know, I didn't know anybody very well. Michael was just there chilling, suntanning, and Spencer was walking the line. I remember it was quite just a funny thing when you stop for a second and think about what was going on. But it was very relaxed, very, very calm, very, I don't know, it was a good...
Wait, so Michael, which we could almost label as his, like, not coach, but, you know, his backup crew, was naked that day?
Yeah, he was just sitting there.
Michael's naked
he would
most
always
days.
Be. It was not only that day, like, he was always suntanning, running around when it was warm. It was just kind of his thing. He still probably does that now.
Yeah. So Michael's just there naked saying like, oh, this is beautiful. This is a beautiful day.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty cool because it shows the community and the style of the community. Yeah. I don't think that the typical climber community is like that, that's why I kind of have respect for you guys. Like just briefly meeting your ex LJ in that community, it seemed like really more of a fun like party vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I found when I started climbing, one of the bigger things that I found was that I really didn't fit in. Mm. You were telling the story of the 70 meter pitch and you lowering your buddy. So here's a situation. We're at Penny Lane, you know? Yeah. So you need a 70 meter rope or it's ideal for that. But we only had a 60 meter rope and we had already started climbing it. And literally we realized this when same thing. I'm like, got my hand on the bottom and I'm like, oh shit. Well, hey, you know what? And I'm like, Brent, grab the rope for a second. So my buddy comes and just like grabs the rope above my belay. And then I just take him off belay, tie the knot, tie myself into it. And I'm like, okay, good. Let go. And let's go. And then all these people are looking over at us like, what the fuck are they doing? Oh my God. And then I'm like, all right, man, whenever you get close, I'm just going to start climbing and then I'll stop for a second. You put me on belay. I don't know, man. To me, it's like, whatever. But of course, you know, some guy's got his fucking opinion and it's like, hey, I get it. You know, we all need to be safe and this and that, but we all trust each other. We can all make fun of our safety. But for some reason, I get really bad vibes from everybody around when we do that. And I think that the Highline community in general just has a good sense of humor about our safety, yet we do take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. And that's like a big dividing line, I feel like, from the two communities.
You will get to notice that too. And more novice individuals, they don't actually know certain techniques that are more safe than they appear. I mean, you're not necessarily cutting corners, but you're doing techniques that... Like same, like I could lower myself on before somebody takes, I could just lower myself on the rope a lot. I do that sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm just going to lower over this ledge so I don't need to ask for take or whatever. Stuff like that, you know, like just brief things or just grab the rope yourself instead of falling, you know?
Things that you shouldn't do, but hey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not train. Like, you're, you know, no one's going to teach you to do that, but you also get in the situation, you're like, fuck, this is going to work.
So but anyway, this dude's naked.
Okay, yeah, right. Michael's dick out, right.
Does that put you in a vibe of like more like chill, like it puts some lightness into the day?
I mean, well, so I was walking away from them at the time, so they're all back on the ledge, and so as I take these catches, you know, I look back at them, and that, you know, that's when Michael, I know he's talking to me, but I've got my headphones in. I didn't hear exactly what he was saying, you know, and as I'm like shimmying back to take those steps, and then it's like I'm very aware of the people that are there because of the presence. Yet when I turn and I face the other side, I'm very alone. I'm like, I'm on my own. I'm walking away from them. I'm, you know, doing it, Yeah. So it was a good feeling. And there was actually a group of people that had stayed up there with us, but they went and rigged a line in the North Gully, and a bunch of them kind of had an idea of what I was going to do, and a lot of them weren't comfortable even hanging around.
That's what Maya was saying, that there was a group of people there and everyone left except for Maya and
Michael and Lee and our buddy Lee.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Why do you think that is?
Fuck, what do you think, man? They don't want to like see somebody fall off and die or whatever. You know, a lot, not everyone's wired the same. Like, just trying to explain myself and how I do things or why I do things. You know, a lot of people just don't understand. A lot of people do. And there's the difference. It's like the person that just doesn't understand doesn't want to watch it. They don't want anything to do with it. They think that somehow it's going to affect them worse if they're there and something bad happens or something, you know.
Affect you?
I mean, or them or whatever, you know. But I also do feel like I feel that energy. I've been around people that are uneasy, like that don't want me to free solo, and I've felt that bad energy. I've like put out to people that I was going to free solo. Girlfriend from years ago that I was dating when I did all of this. I don't like telling her that I was going to go free solo Dean's line when I went to go do that. And I'm up there, I'm like getting psyched. She sends me a message and says like, I really kind of like wish you weren't doing that and this and that. And it's like, I just turned that off. And yeah, that's not going to work. You know, like it's not what I want to hear. Not what I want to hear at all. And that energy, it puts it out there. And you know, there is something about actually kind of letting go, realizing that okay, I'm going to do this. I've trained so hard. I'm ready to do it. Okay. Rigging is correct. Yes. I've walked it. I know that I'm capable. Yes. I can catch the line. Yes. Okay. If I fall off, I'm going to die. Yes. Okay. Let's go. It's like, it is your checklist. And it's like, you think of your relationships. You think of the last time you talked to your family and shit, you know, and like, it's, I always have been like that. I do that when I go up to base jump now, you know, like if I'm walking by myself, I'm not distracted by talking to other people. I'm literally thinking of like what my last conversation with whoever is, or like the way I left something. And that's why I really try to be open and honest always. I don't have a written letter. Like if I go to die, I try to express how I feel to people in the moment, because it's true, it's honest. And quite frankly, I could die tomorrow. And not only doing one of the dangerous things where I've accepted it, but through some accident, driving down the road, whatever, you know. And I feel like it's just important to stay in like a clear mind state like that, where I feel like I'm not holding on to anything, you know. You should check out my savings account, because believe me, I'm not worried about fucking about falling and dying and missing out on the money that I've saved, because there isn't any. I'm just like, you live with a intention of like living, you know, and but I also accept that it could all be ripped away from me in a second. So it's like I'd stay on this edge of like, I don't know, you don't leave too many things hanging, too many loose ends, you know.
That's probably, that part is a healthy aspect of life, that you're aware of the last conversations you've had with different people that matter to you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
it's a good thing, because everyone's got that pending dispute with somebody that they care about.
Yeah,
but you're kind of in a state where you can't allow that, or you don't want to.
It affects me if I have that. Yeah. You know, that's something very real. I can be an emotional person. You know, I don't know. I'm very soft-hearted and in ways, I'll be affected by other people's and my drama, you know, at times. So it's important for me to just clear the air. And even if I don't get a response or something, it's like, it's important for me to just like let people know how I feel.
Were you seeing somebody at the time when you did this line?
I was, yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it was like, you know, a long term, been on and off kind of thing. To be honest, I don't remember how significant it was at the moment. I do remember things like rekindled as like, I don't know, all the stardom or like the attention and stuff like that. It's kind of like she like grabbed onto me to make sure that people knew or something. I don't know.
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, like we weren't like together. We were like together, but not, I don't know. It was like, yeah, like I said, an on and off thing. And then once the video came out, like this, I was like, I had this week where I went on like every like news, like breakfast talk show and fucking radio and just a lineup of different things, you know. And it was, yeah, she was by my side, you know, which was, it was a great help at the time, but same time, I don't know what the intention was or whatever. I'm sure I don't know. I don't look into it. That's not a subject I really care to.
Yeah. To dive into it. Because I was going to say, is that like attention grabbing or like it's latching onto the victory at that point?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she had told me before, like she didn't want, she felt nervous about it. I felt like there was times she had kind of slowed me down in my progression, and maybe that's why there was the space at the time. But after the success, it's a little easier to.
It's hard
to accept it.
Yeah, same in my experience. A significant other will get in your head and be like, I don't feel comfortable about this. And you're like, why are you texting me this the day of?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Like, we had conversations. Yeah. Why are you doing this?
I want support, not this.
Yeah. And I don't think those people understand that. Oh, I can't say that. I was going to say, like, they're putting your life at risk. But in a sense, it really is, because it affects you tremendously.
Well, as two single people, I think that we could say that it probably isn't going to work out if that's the way that it is.
But they love you, right? I can't fault them for being that way, right?
Yeah, love's a fucked up thing.
Yeah. But like, what would you expect somebody that really cares about you, if you're putting your life on a line like that? Would you just there's that like Alex Holland mom that's like, well, this is what he loves to do, so I just gotta accept it. Yeah. But still, he's not telling her like the day that he's doing that, right?
No, I mean, I'd say my relationship with my mom is very similar to that. It's like, she obviously, it scares the fucking shit out of her, you know, but she's also seen what I've accomplished and how happy it makes me and that it is my life, and she's proud of me. She's proud of everything that I've ever done, you know what I mean? But she's also very scared, you know, and naturally. I'm scared when my dog walks too close to the edge of the cliff. I could only imagine what my mother thinks of me and what I do, you know?
Yeah. And like, I wanted to interview your mom, but that was kind of the situation, right? Like, before, well, I wanted to get her.
I've kind of put her on the spot before and asked her to do interviews and things like that. And I asked her, and she said, you know, if you really want me to do it, then I will. But to be honest, it doesn't, you know, it's not super comfortable talking about it. You know, it was an emotional thing for her anyway. And so on the day of, right after I walked this line, I'm now by myself on the third peak, and I have to scramble up and around, and then I meet up with my friends, and first thing I do, I'm like, can I have my phone? I need to call my mom. And then I just like sit down, and I'm like, Mom, hey, you know, it's like, hey, how are you? I'm like, well, I'm fantastic. I actually just broke the world record free solo. And she goes, oh my God, that's great. Jim and I just, we put a bid in on this condo, and she just changed the subject. Of course, I mean, whatever. Anytime I would tell her about dangerous things that I was doing, she would try to not pay attention, say, okay, you know, stay supportive, but also try to not actually think about it too much. And then it was the next day, all of a sudden, you know, a little bit of social media and this and that. And she actually reads it. She goes, oh my God, I can't believe I like changed the subject. So I remember her calling me, being really upset and apologizing of the way that she reacted. And like, it was fine. I understood. I got it. But yeah, it was just funny. It was just funny. Yeah.
Well, that is funny, because at first you were coming off as if she wanted to change the subject because she was uncomfortable. But there's a risk that she was just changing the subject because she didn't understand. And that is a reality, is like, our parents typically don't really know these outdoor sports, and like, what is a big deal to us to them is like, I know you do your thing out there on the slack line.
Yeah.
You
do your day. That I call her to tell her that I broke a world record, in the same sense of her wanting to not hear any of the dangerous things that I'm doing, she's like, yeah, okay, cool, great.
Yeah, beer too.
Yeah. Oh, I knew this one was close. Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
What's it like when you observe, like, LJ, your ex, when she was doing, like, what'd she do, paragliding and stuff?
Yeah.
What do you feel?
I'll just change it to other people, just because. But when I watch other people do dangerous things, it makes me way more nervous than when I'm doing it. I've watched other people free solo. I watched the guy break my world record, and it scared the shit out of me. You know, I'm also like very aware of the mind state, probably more comfortable than other people, but man, I understand why, you know, it'd be really hard to watch. And when you're not in control yourself, that's when it's scary, you know? And base jumping, you know, like, I've mentored friends now. It's like, I'm in no position to actually mentor anybody. And my buddy Jake, I've given him his first base jump. I've taught him how to pack. I've brought him off the cliff for the first time. I've got him started. And you know, now he goes and jumps by himself. And doing a rope swing, he actually, you know, just got caught by the rope funny, and he ended up breaking his back. So he had a few months off.
How does that happen?
He did a rope swing and basically just took a monster whipper, you know, like imagine a 70 meter whipper.
But it wasn't absorbing the catch.
Yeah, I mean, because he hucked flips. So I think he just kind of opened up and the probably didn't crank down the harness tight enough, like the 5 point. But anyway, he just got back from that injury and I was at home. It was like last Sunday, a week ago. He's like, hey, man, I'm going to go for a jump. You want to come? And I'm like, I'm just kind of tired. I'm not really feeling it, whatever. He's like, all right, well, I'm going. And then, you know, an hour later, I get a text from him. He's like, yeah, I'm at the hospital. And it's like, man, it crushed me. It like, it crushed me, you know? And all of a sudden I think of like, what if it was a call from somebody else saying that he just went in? And it's like, oh man, like, so like, as I feel even, it's not even just my friend going out doing something, but I feel this like responsibility over watching, you know, watching them. The same thing when somebody gets on a high line that I've rigged and they weigh a little more than I do and I watch them whip, but, you know, yeah, it's nerve wracking watching other people do dangerous things. But when you know their capabilities, at a certain point, you have to kind of let go and trust.
Why don't you break down a little bit of watching your world record being broken, saying you feel scared as shit, right?
Yeah.
But does it make you reflect on your own entourage that had to watch you do it?
Yeah, I mean, me watching Freedy do it, it was at Hunland Falls. It's in the Slack Life series that Levi has.
Which is where? Where is it?
It's on YouTube. It's all on YouTube for free.
Levi, by the way.
Levi Allen or Left Coast Media. Yeah.
Filmed this award-winning Untethered. I can't pronounce that.
Untethered.
Untethered. Untethered. So anyway, he's the cinematographer that filmed that. We'll put up his credits on YouTube so you guys can watch the video. But anyway, he filmed the series and the world record being rebroken.
Yes. Yeah. He actually wasn't the drone operator at the time. That was Zach Moxley. Levi wasn't available the day that I went up, and I just messaged Zach. I'm like, hey, if you're available, I might be doing something rad today. And he actually just showed up at the time. So,
Yeah.
That's where like the single clip of the world record, it's on his. Okay. But yeah, so Freedy steps on the line and like, well, the day before he was walking it in a way that I knew what he was planning to do. You know, he's a really good slackliner, really good at like bouncing and doing tricks and stuff. And when you see a guy like that just tiptoeing across the line, super carefully, it's like, you know exactly what he's thinking about. And
what is he thinking about?
He's thinking about taking his leash off and free soloing it, right? But I mean, for me, this line, it's next to a waterfall and like there's so much motion and everything going on. It like, it was gnarly as far as I was concerned for like a line to free solo, but he stood up and he just crushed it. He was listening to some fucking techno too. He likes it like deep. Yeah. But yeah, it was amazing to see it. And he was probably more than capable of soloing the line that I did when I did it, but his mind wasn't there or he didn't have the motivation, whatever it was. And I do believe that I inspired him. So I love the fact that like my spirit brought somebody who was already better to like realize their potential or something, you know, because he was always so at such a higher level than me in slacklining. And he was around during the filming of Untethered. He's the, you know, he's in it, Freedy, and he's way better than I am. He's crushing this stuff, you know. And then it's like cut to me soloing a line longer than he ever had or anyone ever had. And yeah, so I feel like I definitely sparked that with him and made him realize the potential that he had.
That's cool. And how did you feel as far as like passing on the flame?
Stoked, man. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a little part of you, you know, you're like, I don't have it anymore. But I also wasn't like, I had a torn meniscus. So like I was kind of learning to stand up on a slack line in a different way. And I wasn't free soloing at the time. And it wasn't like I was some competing factor that was like really devastated that I didn't have it anymore. You know, it was like, well, it's time.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get into like the why a little bit. Do you think a certain percentage of it is based on ego and leaving a legacy?
I honestly don't believe that my ego had anything to do with it. I really believe like at the time it was just like the natural progression of like where I got to, because I had tried to do it in a time before, but I wasn't willing to push myself beyond what I was capable of, you know. And that's an ego check. You're not going to do something that your life depends on for ego. Otherwise you're kind of flipping a coin, you know. I don't know. It's like you need to have your intentions aligned. Mm. Being comfortable not succeeding is okay, you know, but it's like, yeah. And I feel like I'm relatively humble about like, you, anyone asks, I'm not the best slackliner in the world. I never at no point in my life have I ever been, you know. I think that at that point I was the strongest mentally, also with the availability of this spot and the people to help me rig and all of that. Like, all of these things add up to this point. It's not that I'm some magnificent person that made all of this happen. It happens through, you know, helping other people helping you, and everything coming together, like the weather, the wind, the right people sitting on the rock. Like, maybe if Michael didn't have his dick out, maybe I wouldn't have felt comfortable. You know what I mean? It's like, it all happens for a reason. It all works out in the end, and it's not solely because of me. And I can't turn around and say that it's all me, you know? It's not, there's no ego saying that I did this. It's like, I did it through those OG slackliners teaching me what they taught me. I did it through my best friends checking my stuff because they're smarter than me and they know, you know. I did it through all of those things, and I give credit to all of those people for all of those things, because I could not have done any of these things by myself. It's a funny thing about the sport, right? You're out on the line, you're absolutely alone, but go try to rig a line on your own. It's, you can do it, but it sucks, man. It's not something you do.
How do you do that again? Like, logistically, how do you get the line across?
It depends. Gap? Yeah.
For that one,
I actually rented a rope gun from a rescue store in town. It takes 22 caliber blanks and a foam projectile. And yeah, you fucking fire this thing across.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. And that's just the tagline.
Yeah. So that would be like a light string.
Yeah, yeah.
And then with that, you'd pull over. I mean, for that length of line, we actually, I think at that time we were just using like paracord and pulling it across.
Yeah. And I also saw that is it behind the scenes where you guys tow another line with the drone?
Oh yeah, for sure. So yeah, that's the most common way of doing that now.
Really? Droning? Oh, yeah. Droning lines across?
Yeah, I have a Mavic. Well, like, my company owns the Mavic, and it's like literally, that's all. I don't even put a SD card in it. It's like literally it's a rigging tool.
Really?
Yeah.
What's your company?
Slacklife BC.
Okay.
So we sell slackline gear online.
No,
yeah, we do a lot of, we've done a lot of different stuff over the years, but that's the base of our company.
Oh, sick. Yeah, I'll put the link up.
Yeah, for sure.
So again, though, the why is it, it's just a progression thing for you. That's like why you want to get it done.
It's because it's what I wanted to do. You know, it's like, literally, it's just why anything? Why do anything? You know, and it's like, because I'm privileged enough to be able to take time to mess around in the mountains and do this sort of thing, you know, like, because I visualized it happening, because I said it out loud that I wanted it, you know, like, you don't need a why. You really don't. You just need a what. You're like, where, you know? Yeah.
It's true. And it is interesting, the whole privilege thing. It is kind of my life is going well enough where I can afford to do this kind of risk. But like, you know, in like third world country, you have a family to support. You're not going to you're not going to break the world record slack
line. You know? Well, I mean, you're taking extra risk at that point, right? What do you have to lose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What type of people would you think really push themselves in these kind of outrageous ways? Like, you know, would there be a similarity between you and Honnold? Would there be a similarity within you and Dean Potter? What type of character tend to engage in this?
I'm not really sure, you know. And I think that, you know of me, you know of Dean, you know of Alex, but there's also a ton of people out there that do just as gnarly stuff that you just don't know about it. You know, I think that's like the big thing, is like, it's quite common in people, you know, but it's only now with this new, with the way that everyone knows everything that everyone's doing, you know, you have this ideal that, oh, if somebody does some long free solo, there's going to be a video, it's going to be posted, everyone's going to know about it. But like, quite frankly, there's a lot of things that could have been done that nobody knows about. And I believe, like, you know, in climbing or in many senses, lots of things have happened that like are just simply word of mouth, and the person doesn't really care to be acknowledged for it, you know? So
I have such respect for those people.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I really do, because it's really hard to not be like, hey, I did this, you know. Yeah. It's hard to not be proud of it, you know?
Yeah. What do you think differentiates those people from like people like even myself or yourself, you know?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think, I think they're doing it for the right reasons. You know, I think like I struggle in posting stuff on Instagram and stuff like that. Like, cause I just find like, everyone's so like fake and bullshit, you know? And I feel like I just post the same thing over and over. And it's like, I kind of have like the, I have like semi-obligations, you know, through sponsors and stuff like that, where I kind of need to, like, you know, promote stuff and do whatever, and it's cool to, like, show the world, but, like, I also just, like, don't really care. I have so much cool footage that no one's ever seen, but also it's, like, not really important for me to just go, like, this is what I'm doing always, you know, my life is super great. It's like, yes, I like to throw something out there here and there, let people know I'm alive, still doing stuff, but, like, yeah, I get tired of doing stories every day and, yeah, saying this is me, you know, I'm not big on it. It is, yeah. And a lot of people think that I should capitalize on my online presence or popularity or whatever, but it's like, honestly, I could give two shits. It kind of bothers me that some days people recognize me and I'm just out in a mood walking my dog or whatever. So I'm like, oh, hey, man, I recognize you from the movie. It's like, that's really cool. I really like that. But I also... on the mirror. I don't know, you know, so I've learned through that and just the constant same questions over and over again. No offense to you right now. You know, I've been asked the same questions over and over about the same things, you know, and I'm totally fine answering them, but there's a time and a place, you know, and some people don't always get that. So I'd almost prefer to keep my things a little bit more private nowadays.
Let's be real. Like in a sense, you're kind of famous within this like small community, but to be truly famous, oh, that sounds like the worst. That sounds like the worst thing like you could ask for.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, like I was saying, last year we filmed a TV show for Discovery Channel that'll be coming out in June. It'll be on Discovery Plus, their new streaming platform. And we just had a meeting about how, like, I need to make all my shit private and I need to, like, make sure my phone number isn't on the internet. I don't say where I'm actually at in the moment of being at that place because it'll just be so different. It's like, On the subject that I was, the way that I just put it, I'm not fucking stoked about that at all right now. I'm interested to see what happens. I know that that's a little bit, you know, our show is a little bit different than like the average one, but I don't know if I'm looking forward to it or not.
What's the reason for that?
What's that?
Like stalkers or like?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people that you don't want to know where you are, the people that want to know, like a fan or whoever that like thinks that it'll be cool to show up at your house and say hi. But like,
have you experienced like slacklining groupies?
I mean, it's funny. I think most real slackliners are pretty chill. It's funny when I meet somebody and I don't ever expect that they know who I am and I introduce myself and like, oh, cool, you know? And like after a period of time, once they feel comfortable, they're like, hey man, I actually I'm a huge fan and this and that. I love that. I like when somebody's real with me. It's weird when someone's just like, hey man, oh my God. Yeah, it's like, calm down. I'm a stoner who walked the line without a leash on, right? Just settle down. Probably better than I am. I just figured it out in my head, you know? I don't know.
Well, it sounds like you do it for the right reasons. Like I've heard many solos say, like myself, I don't push those limits in any sense, shape or form, but having gone through a breakup recently too, like I'm in a place where I don't know, I have the urge to solo and I do, but it's not pushing any boundaries.
No, for sure.
But it's still like, it's not a good,
it's because you're looking place. Inside right now. You're like talking to the internal person, you know? And that's like, once you don't have that partner that you're like constantly like interacting with and speaking with and helping or them helping you, it's like all of a sudden you're like, you're yourself, you're dealing with your own entity now, you know? And it's like soloing is that, you know, you're not dealing with your climbing partner, you're dealing with yourself. You're climbing, you know that you're in control, you know that you're safe because of the feel of your feet and your hands on the rock, you know? And that's what life is, you know? All of a sudden you're relying on your belay partner to catch you if you fall. Well, sometimes you don't have that, you know? And that's probably why your mind's going there. I get that too, you know? I get in a mood and I'll just put some music on and go hike and jump off a cliff, you know? Fucking sick.
Fucking sick.
Yeah.
No, but like for me, it's not natural. I'm afraid of heights, man. Like I straight up don't like the heights.
Are you really? Or are you afraid of hitting the ground?
Yeah, that's everyone's got that, right? But no. I was like, I was straight up that person. Like, you know, you go next to like a cliff, and I'm like inching over the ledge, like on all fours, like oh fuck that, dude, like fuck that, right? So it's not natural for me to do things that are like soloing and stuff. And I don't know, I feel like maybe a part of me is, it's that like I don't want to rely on anyone, but also it's like out of sadness or something. I don't know.
Yeah. But see, I'm also very afraid of heights, I could say, because I definitely arrive at a cliff and I'm like, whoa, I'm scared of falling off. That's my fear of heights. But not until I've spent enough time around that cliff. I trust the grip of my shoes, this and that. I'm aware of my surroundings, that I become a little bit more comfortable with it, you know? So of course, everyone's afraid of heights. That's evolution. But it's learning to be comfortable in that situation that is like key, that you've, you know, you climb, right? It's like you've learned, right? You get more comfortable. And then soloing, it's the same thing. You're like, this is scary, but I know my surroundings. I'm comfortable. I'm calm. I know that I'm safe because of A, B, and C, whatever. Yeah.
But I don't think I have that like mindset like Honnold of full on trust. To me, it's always like, oh, I could fucking die. Like, oh, yeah. I could fucking die. Like, yeah. And it's always there. Like, in you know, I'll look around. I'm like,
but that's
I don't
usually
know.
What keeps you alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
That's true. When I guess when you get casual, that's when you get complacent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, so one of the questions I saw on your Instagram when someone was asking is, have I ever backed out of a solo?
Yep.
Right? So when Dean Potter died, I felt an urge that I should go up, rig his line, and free solo it as like an homage to him. And I had already soloed it before. I was very current in soloing. But I went up there that day. I stood on it. I took a couple of steps out. And then I just sat down. And then I like looked back and I'm like, no, I don't think I'm feeling it today. And I just got this feeling. I don't know what it was. And I backed out. Yeah.
And you walked down. You walked away?
Yeah, I walked away. Yeah, I didn't solo it. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So that was, and I had already soloed this line before. It wasn't like some groundbreaking new thing. It just simply wasn't the time. I don't know. I just gave me some feeling. I wasn't digging it. So maybe I went there to pay homage to him, but maybe paying homage to him by falling off and dying wasn't the right thing. And that's what might have happened had I pushed beyond whatever, you know? So I don't, you know, listen to your gut sometimes.
I literally had that the other day. I drove up with a plan in mind, ended up getting distracted doing something else for part of the day. And then I was like, oh, I'm still want to, like I had that plan in my head.
Yeah.
So then I went, drove to the parking lot, looked at it. And I was like, no, you should walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't.
To free solo something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
Yeah, that's good. And you got to listen to yourself. And then there's also days where I've kind of like you try to talk yourself out of it, but you just keep moving towards it in ways. You know, I do that with jumping all the time where I'm like, nah, I don't want to go jump today. I look outside and then I'm like, it is pretty calm. No, it's all right though. It's all right. And then it's like walking around and you're like, well, maybe I'll like just go to the parking lot and see what it looks like, you know? Maybe I'll just start walking. I don't know. See how I feel. And the next thing you know, you're at the exit and you're like, fuck, I guess I'm jumping off, aren't I? You just, I don't know what happens, you know?
How did that progression happen? Because I feel like slacklining, some people could argue it's not necessarily an adrenaline sport, but I think it's kind of hard to deny that base jumping is not an adrenaline sport.
It's all adrenaline in the way that you're like putting it out there. You know, you're going to places that people haven't done. It's elevated heart rates. It's like all of that, right? Base jumping, to me, it's like I just hiked up and looked down so many times that it's like I got really comfortable with the abyss. I got comfortable with like that place there and I had a really healthy desire to jump off of it, you know? And like I did rope swings and stuff like that. And an old local here, Treehouse Mike, I used to run into him in the parking lot all the time. He was like the local base jumper hooligan. And I begged him for years to let me base jump, but it's like, you have to go skydive. That's it. You go skydiving if you want to base jump. And so he showed up to the premiere of Untethered and he was like, man, I'm proud of you, this and that. I'm going to let you base jump, but it's in one place and one place only. I'll call you with the details. So he calls me, brings me out to this place where it's a bridge and a big snowy bowl. And it's like, okay, you know, you got to do what you got to do. You know, like he gave me the rundown of what to do and I did it. And that's called death camp. You know, it's like sky or base jumping with zero experience.
So you hadn't skydived?
I had done two skydives at this point. So I did start, I tried, but I also ran out of time and money. And skydivers are kind of like climbers in the weird way in comparison, you know? So then the next year I was down in Moab, Utah at this Highline Festival and I kept begging him to let me jump off the cliff and he kept saying no. And I kind of, we made a deal and he let me do it. So I had like this taste, you know, and after that I got my solo license for skydiving, but yeah, I had like 13 jumps or something. And then I didn't jump for a year. I did one more base jump that Sketchy Andy put a rig on me and let me open up the space net, be the first jump out of it, which is super cool and honor.
Wait, what is that? A space net?
Space net. It's like the net rigged out in the middle of the canyon. Like okay. We rig it with slack lines and it's like a big giant flat net. You can walk on it, jump off of it and stuff. Yeah.
Wait, is a slack line over net?
No. It's like, it's just like a big net and then the corners are tensioned by like slack lines.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it's like this one's big. This one's like 500 square feet, and it has a big hole in the middle of it that you can pop through. Yeah, it's super cool. But anyway, yeah. So after that, Treehouse actually passed away, and he was the one that was always like, "You need this experience before you base jump, and this and that." And I kind of just felt this like weird feeling of like, I'm just gonna buy a parachute now, and I did. And then I went down to Utah and I did some jumps off a bridge in Idaho. And basically I would not suggest that anybody ever follows the same path that I did. I got lucky. I have continued to get lucky, but you need to skydive a whole bunch to learn how to fly the canopy. I think that I'm very well endowed in my skills of running and jumping off a cliff and my body awareness while I'm doing so. But when the parachute opens up and I need to land on the ground, unless you know what you're doing, you're just going to hurt yourself. And if something goes wrong, your parachute opens, you're facing the cliff, you're going to fucking smack the cliff. And I mean, if your canopy, you're going to die if something goes wrong and you don't know how to fly the canopy. And quite frankly, I got really lucky and I learned the hard way. You know, I learned through crashing and every person around me told me that I was an idiot for the way I was doing it. But I also continued. And at a certain point, some people are like, okay, I'm going to just give you this advice, even though I know that you shouldn't, but I know that you're going to do it anyway and you're better off doing it with my advice. But now I'm at like 200 and something base jumps and like I've learned a lot.
With only two free dives?
No, I'm now at... I've done legitimate drop zone skydives. I've done, I think, 13 or 14. And then I've done another 5 now that are just out of a buddy's plane.
But the etiquette is, I've heard 200, right?
Yeah, like generally what they say. But 200 skydives is not going to teach you to run and jump off a cliff. Right. That's a whole other set of skills that the numbers that people say, it doesn't apply to everybody because a real number might be 500 for someone. You know, I know people with 1,000 skydives that don't ever want to base jump because they think it's too scary or dangerous or whatever, you know?
Is slacklining in the back burner now?
A little bit, you know, I do still have, I don't care so much about the act of slacklining or highlining, like just in general, like at the local spots. But if we're like, hey, let's go up to that mountain peak and figure out how to rig a line. And first we got to spend a day packing and then we're going to spend a day suffering and then another day suffering. And then we might get a chance to walk it once, but it's going to be in this epic, beautiful location. The anchors will probably only hold fucking just beyond what a whipper is, so maybe don't whip on it. I love that shit, like adventure highlining, you know?
Oh yeah, that's
not
a thing.
So much about walk, because honestly, like, not, I don't know how, like, you know, without sounding dickish or whatever, but it's fucking easy, man. It really, once you learn it, it is easy. And once you get beyond just walking, like, there's a range of things you can do to up to challenge yourself by doing tricks and different things, but I'm just not into that. Like, but walking, like, man, I didn't walk a line for like 3 months. I got on one line, kind of struggled. That was like 200 meters long. And then a week later, after not slacklining at all, I got on a 500 meter long line and walked it first try. And then not highlining at all for another probably month. And then I got on a 650 meter long line. I walked it first try there and back in like 17 minutes or something, like just running across it, you know? And it's like, I feel like I have the skills to do it. I have the mindset to do it. I'm just not that excited to do it on like the regular basic level, you know?
What's going through your mind when you're doing a long ass line like that? And is it the same thing that's going through your mind when you were soloing across the Chief?
No. It's like, I am so close to falling, and every moment walking those long lines, I feel like I'm trying to get speed. I am not Mr. Endurance, so I need to get across it fast, you know? So I'm trying to walk fast. I'm trying to walk just in the amount of control that I need, which once you kind of let go and your legs are moving, you actually find this point where you're just dialed and you're moving. But yeah, to cross the line and like 17 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever it was. It was short.
That seems like so long to be balancing.
Yeah, but you're moving, you know, and it's like as you walk the line changes. So like the beginning of it, you've got a mile ahead of you, and these long lines are segmented in 50 meter sections. So you like get to a point and you like know that you're at 50 meters, okay, 50 meters, 50 meters. And all of a sudden you're like, wait, fucking, how many is that? You're like, oh shit, okay, just quit thinking about it. Just keep walking, you know? It's like really, again, smoking a little bit of weed, having a really good like mix, like an hour long, like house mix or something that just keeps you going, not like a playlist, because then this track ends and then the next song comes on and it changes. Like you need something to keep you fluent and in the same mind state. And
oh yeah, those like constant songs, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You put on like a mix, right?
Oh,
like
so
a
never ends.
From DJ's live mix from the party you went to.
I've done that.
Oh dude, it's good. Yeah. And they like bring you into it, get you fucking rocking, and then either end with a bang or like, you know, bring you back down. It's good. Find it on SoundCloud. I just pick a good mix and, you know, all sorts of different DJs. And
but what's going through your mind when you're soloing? I want to know, like, is there something you're constantly repeating, like words or something?
Keep walking. Like, yeah, step, keep walking or catch.
That's what's going in your mind?
Yeah. Keep walking or catch. Probably the two things.
Nothing else? Nothing else is leaking in?
Nope. It's maybe at the very end. That's when you're like... Yeah. Like keep fucking going.
So folks that described this, and like even in the video, that they address the relief of being with you, like being present with you, not necessarily. And Maya, I think Maya was a good person to have there, because she wasn't freaking out, she wasn't giving you those bad vibes. No. Personally, like I've had that. I have like a solo where it was going so well and I see a crowd of people and I hear the fucking whispers, like,
oh yeah,
oh my god, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah,
and I'm like,
shut the fuck up.
No, in my head I'm like, yeah. I like want to like yell in the crowd like, don't fucking look at me.
But yeah, knowing your surroundings in those moments, right? Because things can switch.
But she described being present with you, not necessarily being nervous, just observing and kind of a blank mind,
mm-hmm.
being locked in with you. But once you're off, like, whew, and once you said, I'm not going to walk it back, I'm going to walk around.
Yeah.
Everyone being like, oh, thank fucking Lord.
Yeah, for sure.
How did it feel once you're done? Was there any sadness?
No, dude, I honestly had tears in my eyes, 100%. It was emotional. It was really nice to be over there by myself. I sat down for a second and I just like cried for a second. You know, it was really emotional. I had fucking goosebumps. It was like, it was a dream. It didn't even just happen. You know, it was like, whew, it was a lot, you know, a lot. And like just that, fuck, there's a lot of emotion, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of like everything. And it just felt like, I felt empowered. I felt like I could, fuck, you know, do anything, you know. It felt really fucking good, like, whew. And then when I walked around by myself, there was like somebody sitting at the peak, you know. They had no idea what had just happened, and I just walked past them, you know, just like, I don't know, just felt great, felt fantastic. There's no feeling like I've had lots of great feelings of accomplishment, and like I'm stoked that I did these things, but like, man, that the feeling of that, like the true, how long it took me to build up to getting there, standing up and catching, thinking in my head, fuck, do I really want to do this? Yes, I do want to do this. Okay. Walking, fighting, struggling, screaming, cruising. Wow. You know, like just, yeah, good feeling.
We could potentially end it there.
Yeah,
extending it just for my own personal curiosity, were there those moments where you had already said that you're gonna do it and you're like, eh, why, like, should I though, like, maybe I shouldn't,
up until the moment of standing up the last moment, like, you know, absolutely. Yeah, when I soloed it, I had a harness on and I had a carabiner with me, because I knew that like when I fell in the middle of Dean's line, I shimmied back, but it was 30 meters long. So now imagine I'm in the middle of this 64 meter long line, and I'm not going to stand up free solo in the middle of it, I don't think, anyway. And so this is my plan B. I can give up at any moment, catch the line and secure myself and slide back, you know, something that like Alex Honnold or anyone who climbs rock climbing, there's no out. Where I had an out, you know, and it's like me talking about how I would always catch, I'd always trust, and this is that's how I justified me being safe to the absolute extent, even if halfway through I decided I wasn't going to do it.
that's like an ethical thing in soloing, or it's like a how people view it thing. I've considered doing specific lines climbing with a harness and a couple pieces of gear, and and I was like, yeah, if I get scared, I'll put in some gear, I'll climb a little more, put in some gear. Sure, I'll like I'll shock load it if I fall, but at least it'll be there and I'll feel better mentally. But then the other part of you is like, well, that's not how you do it. That's not,
no, for sure. Yeah, but I mean, if you use it, then you use it. If you don't, you still soloed.
I don't know. But with of course, a harness and some gear.
Some purist might tell you that yes, you are not soloing. But any person that ever questioned me, I asked them to go to the middle of a 64-meter line solo, stand up in the middle, and see if it feels any safer with a harness on.
Yeah, that's
it. Doesn't
point.
It doesn't.
Yeah. What is the hardest point on the traverse?
I'd say like in for any free solo, the first step is the hardest. The first couple of steps, standing up, tough, but taking actually like picking up your feet that are seem stuck in that moment, you know, that's the hardest part for sure.
Getting the engine revving.
Yeah. But once it's moving,
in the middle is not more wobbly.
No, because in the middle, you're kind of in control of both sides, at least in a line this length. When you're at one end or the other, you have like a mass amount of weight on the line in front of you, and you're trying to control a lot more of the line. It's harder to control at a longer length, like on its own. When you're in the middle of it, you're like more in control of the whole general weight of the line, right? Mm. But that all depends on tension and a lot of different things.
And the other question I just wanted to know is like one of the things that Maya mentioned. She said, when you do these things, that you do got to think the impact of a death would be more impactful on the people, your surroundings, more so than yourself.
Yeah.
Do you ever, how do you, I think of it like that when I climb. I'm like, I feel like it's kind of a selfish endeavor. I still love it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you justify it in your own mind?
A, it makes me happy. I would not be myself if I didn't follow my passions or my goals or where, for whatever reason I decided to do these things. If I decided to do it because of someone or something else, I wouldn't really be happy. Probably the most selfish thing I've ever done was Christmas morning. I didn't have a mimosa or Bailey's in my coffee, and I left my parents' house in North Van with all of my family. I drove up and I jumped off the Chief, and then I went back, and it was like, man, I'm walking up the Chief and I'm like, what a idiot. I like, honestly, what if something happened right now? It's bad enough on any other day, but I literally just walked away from like being gathered with my family. I'm very aware of all of that. I've seen death in the community. I've seen how it affects family and friends. I'm very aware of all of it. And so through that, I just try to be true to myself and my goals, and also let people know how much I love them or how much I hate them or whatever it is. You know what I mean? I try to stay true to myself and let people know. And so that I do believe that from what I've expressed in my life to my close loved ones, that if I were to die, it's not like it's going to make it easier, but there's a, I've talked about it. You know, I've let people know what my mind state is and that I'm understand, I'm comfortable with it. And doesn't mean they have to be, but I feel like, yeah, you know, no part of me wants to die. I want to live, be very old, continue doing all of this. But I also understand that it could happen. And, well.
I was going to ask, like, you want to be an old man?
I'll be miserable old man if I get there. But, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Who doesn't want to keep living life and crushing it? You know, absolutely. All of us. I have zero intention of dying. I am scared shitless. That's why I haven't done a gainer or base jumping. That's why I haven't done a lot of different things that I would love to do, but I'm afraid, you know, I'm very afraid. And so I inch forward, and through inching forward, I've accomplished a lot, you know, so I'll just continue inching forward. When I'm comfortable, when it's time, I'll do it. And you know, whatever. Shit happens, man.
Why do you say miserable, man?
Oh, because I've poured concrete for 15 years. I've had fucking knee injuries, hand injuries, back, shoulder, whatever it is, you know, I'm going to be sore. that's about it. And successfully, I will be sore because I lived a good life, you know?
Yeah. You earned the injuries.
Yeah, for sure.
Any parting words?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the same old. Like, if you have a dream, you go out there and do it. It doesn't have to happen the next day. It doesn't have to be death-defying or whatever it is. Yeah, like, too many people have their goals aligned with financials, and I really believe that. I mean, if money makes you happy, then okay, but I don't find that money makes me happy. I find it brings me trouble and useless things that I don't need. I find the purest thing is just, you know, going out and doing the things that I love. It's, there's nothing more rewarding than accomplishing goals. That's it.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You smell that? I think I smell a rating and a review on the Apple Podcasts and a subscription on YouTube.
Oh, you're so kind and generous!
And if you want to help support the guest, Spencer, then you can go to Slack Life BC. And if you want to check out the phenomenal film that we talked about the whole episode, it's called Untethered by Levi Allen. Great watch. Bye.